Baptist 21 is a pastor-led voice for Southern Baptists in the 21st century. The B21 podcast will discuss current issues in the SBC with Southern Baptist church leaders. To check out more resources, visit us at baptist21.com.
Nate Aiken here with the Baptist 21 podcast, and this morning I have with me Rob Williams, and he's going to introduce himself in just a moment, but we're going to talk about the stuff going on with Harvest Bible Church in Chicago, in the Chicago area. Rob used to be on staff there, and he's going to give us, again, a little bit of his bio. So, Rob, thanks for taking time to do this.
Yeah, glad to be here, Nate.
Well, just tell us a little bit about who you are and kind of what you've done in ministry, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I started out in ministry with Campus Outreach, did that for a few years, and then went on to seminary. Went to Southeastern, got an MA in biblical counseling, and went to Chicago, worked with an organization that provided counseling for many local churches, kind of on an adjunct level, and making sure that there was seamless care with pastors and the counseling that I did. And we ended up being hired by Harvest Bible Chapel and went on staff there for about 20 months, counseling pastor overseeing three of the seven campuses there in the Chicagoland. And I guess since things began to unroll and we saw it coming, we slowly made a transition. So now in Northern Virginia, Emmanuel Bible Church, same role, same job description, love what I'm doing, counseling and training other people to do the same.
Man, that's great. Tell us, could you just give us what your thoughts are about all this going on? Maybe first give a recap for anybody who doesn't fully know, but just you had boots on the ground there. So give a recap and kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah. So Harvest Bible Chapel's been around. They just celebrated 30 years under the leadership of James McDonald. Pretty big name in church world and popular walk in the word, radio and television ministry. And I think over the last two decades, there's been more concerns, and they've been handled at different levels along the way by elders. And I think from most of what's coming out now, it's been handled in an unsatisfactory way, and less change has taken root, and the systems in play continued, and it only got worse. And I think with longevity, that can certainly be a blessing, but longevity can be a curse also. And then when you think when it is a curse, how many things are so disjointed and out of order, how impactful that can be at every level, all the way down to the individuals who make up the congregation. So as of late, some accounts have been compiled since maybe the last 6 years, and that's been enough to really make the elders step up and take a look at, again, the qualifications of elders and what exactly are we dealing with. And so much was secret, unfortunately. And when it comes out, I think we're slowly learning, and all of us are, learning the nature of what was going on behind the scenes.
What would you say are some of the like high level, these were some troubling things that were happening?
Troubling things. There's certainly abuse, and I don't want to use that word so lightly and so flippantly, but certainly spiritual abuse, allegations, and certainly accounts of sexual abuse, minors involved. There's financial mismanagement. And then the systems of government, I think, have caused a lot of trouble. And I think it's the systems, that would be the financial and the governance. And then the character comes into question, I guess, with some of the money handling and lust for power and even the abuse of people and congregation.
Now, when you say abuse, I want to be careful. We're not saying that he, James, who's been removed, we're not saying that he particularly abused anybody sexually. We're not saying that. We'll be very, very clear about that. You're saying there's been some abuse in the sense of harshness, that kind of thing. And then there has been other people, leaders in the church, who have actually sexually abused folks in the church.
Well, I think both and. Last week, there was a woman who came out and aired what maybe 05, 06 was known to some at Harvest, and she has allegations of some unwanted touching going on. And But yes, certainly all the other things going on. James isn't, to my knowledge, going around physically abusing people, but there are certainly systems and abuse of power and money, all of those things at play.
So you're serving on staff there at a certain point. At what point did you start to say, okay, I see some unhealthy things going on?
I think early on I was told by pastors to kind of expect the jovial, they didn't call it bullying, but they called it banter. When all the pastors would get together, just know that, hey, you're new, you may get some of this, but just be okay, be lighthearted. It's all in good fun. And I think to an extent it is. It's a bunch of pastors hanging out, getting together and having meetings. But at some point there are some things that may cross a line, or some jokes, or some just deriding an individual, a little bit of banter, but mixed in with a little bit of letting you know who's in charge. And I think for my wife and I, we began to have a little more concern when Harvest Bible Fellowship disbanded, because that was a large church planting network, maybe 150 churches. And it was James resigned as president and said that the whole thing was dissolved in a day on a moment's notice. And there was all kind of financial implications on that. And then we, throughout the fall, then had a giving campaign that further confused what are we doing with the finances here?
Would you say that you believe it was the right step for the elders then to remove him? And what are some thoughts you have about the polity? I mean, you've talked about some of the structures being troubling. What do you think were, yeah, what are the unique temptations, or maybe the unique ways in which the certain polity that Harvest had would lead to something like this?
Yeah. I guess depending on where you are with your ecclesiology and why the church gathers, and is multi-site okay, or are we one church, one location, one service down to that degree? I think that's irrelevant. But once you get to a certain point, size-wise, in one location or many, shepherding's going to be complicated. And I think more people on staff allows a smaller group. Usually when a church gets so large, they want to get a smaller group of elders that oversees so many people, and it the ratio is disproportionate, and the ability to shepherd and care well. And then, well, if there's this small group handling money over here, it can be so isolated. People can do whatever they want in this group. And I think for us, my job was counseling. So at some point I began noticing more of my work was starting to have counseling conversations with staff rather than actually counseling the congregation and equipping the congregation. And I didn't go there to handle internal conflict. So when we talk about systems, I think a big thing, observation was, here's our model. Here's the one we're saying is leading us. The way that one person acts, certainly the multi-sites look to a personality or a big name, and that's who's our model for most everything. And I think the ways in which there was relationships with James became the bar for how we all do relationship. So there was a lot of internal conflict, and I think the elders, there was a separation. Elders and pastors did less communicating. Pastors did not go to elder meetings. Elders didn't come to pastor meetings.
So they have the elders and the pastors are separate.
Separate.
Yeah. Okay. So they're not the same office at Harvest.
No joint meeting at all. And I think that's where, at least hearing from some elders now, we only deal with the facts, and they put that in air quotes, facts that we've been told. Mm. So I think there's more that the pastors see. And then there's something different that the elders would hear.
Now would be a good time to tell you about our sponsor for the Baptist 21 podcast, The Pillar Network. If you're a pastor interested in leading your church to partner with a community of like-minded SBC churches that are doctrinally aligned, missionally driven, and committed to fulfilling the Great Commission by equipping the next generation of pastors to both plant and revitalize churches, then consider joining The Pillar Network. You can find out more information at thepillarnetwork.com. That's thepillarnetwork.com. Do you anticipate that there's going to be more that comes out. I mean, this the one guy on the radio there in Chicago says he has hundreds of hours of, you know, obviously what was really troubling when it came to the Christianity Today stuff. Do you anticipate there's going to be more that we hear about?
I do. I do anticipate more coming. You think, again, this type of behavior, certainly not for 30 years, because it would have never gotten off the ground if it was from the get-go. But over time, I think structures have allowed things. And when you get away with some, I think there's just a little more that you can do. And certainly the larger it grows, the more you may pursue it, the more, I guess, the ripple effects begin to take place. And you don't know that my ministry was being used in a way so that it would prop up this bigger plan that someone else had. And I think people are realizing that they were being used in different ways. Ministries were being used to power and abuse the congregation. And it's just, it's really confusing. So I think there will be more as people stop and pay attention what exactly has been happening in my small group or at my campus or with my leadership. And I think the more people pick their head up, they will start to ask questions, and certainly accounts will come out.
Let me ask a big question and just have several parts to it. What do you think needs to happen at Harvest next? How is the congregation doing right now? And then and if you don't know, you know, like I'm not asking you to speculate, but how is James McDonald responding at all? Is there going to be any kind of like, y'all, you know, didn't handle this rightly, y'all didn't fire me right, you know, I could bring some kind of suit or whatever. Is there anything you're hearing when it comes to that as far as where we're going to go from here?
So less I'm hearing about that, James has been fired, or I don't know if resign's a word. There was often the chance to give people the opportunity to resign before they get fired. So I don't know what he's doing now, but right now he's supposed to be no longer senior pastor. And I think concerns would be that some of the elders, there was a push as all of this stuff was coming out late 2018 that the elders would sign this unconditional support of James McDonald letter. And I would say of the 30 elders, probably 90% signed that.
Wow.
And a lot of those guys are still on the elder board, and they just reduced it from 30 to 9 to say, hey, let's really try to investigate the finances and the accounts, and let's pursue some reconciliation. But the troubling piece is that there's this executive committee that oversaw the finances piece, and that was four elders who now have come to that group of nine. And I think all of the nine signed the unconditional support. And then these guys also, the four of them, were handling the finances. And they say that it was to keep the ECFA accreditation on there. But at this point, we know a lot of things are so misused. We know that Walk in the Word money was given to raise a deer herd so that we could have fun hunting. At this point, who cares about an accreditation of finances? We want to be honest, and I think that's where keeping up appearances, that has come and gone, and I think the nine elders that sit there need to really open books, listen to accounts from the congregation, and not dismiss them, because that's been the pattern for so long. Let's dismiss, let's outcast. If you want to be a whistleblower or someone who asks questions, you're divisive, and we're going to start to exclude you from some community. And I don't think that's the way biblically we want to hear each other. We want to come to a peaceful understanding with each other, and that has not happened. So going forward, I think holding meetings where congregants can share what's going on in their hearts and any accounts, any situations that they've experienced, and I guess leadership, a mass level of repentance, and just putting it out there, putting the books out there and letting everyone see it, and being open and transparent as you can. And if that is further resignations, then so be it. But I think that's what, I think that's God refining the church. And it is troubling, but it is also a good thing that some of this is coming out.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to leave it just with talking about the situation, because I think it's just way too easy, particularly for young men in the ministry. And then, I mean, you see seminary students kind of coming out of the woodwork with their critiques on social media. And so I don't want to leave it there. I want to have a conversation with you, particularly with your counseling background. What is it that we need to be doing in our own hearts, in our own lives, and even just in our structures? Again, we don't have to get into the debate of multi-site or one service, but what are some things that we need to be doing as pastors so that we take heed unless we would fall?
Yeah. I think initially when sin comes out, certainly on a big level like this, it's easy to get caught up in the drama of the story and have a little entertainment factor. But I think that the more godly responses would be an immediate self-reflection, and none of us are above these things. I think if we desire something and want to isolate and pursue something without anyone else knowing, we can push off accountability. We can pursue things that are ungodly. And I think calling for a time of self-reflection and what are some areas, maybe get two or three buddies that know you really well and ask them, hey, what are some areas in my life that you see? And then give them the freedom to speak into your life in an ongoing way so that if anything, I mean, sin's deceptive. Sin is creeping and you do not see it, you don't expect it, and it's always an opportunity. Two books that I've looked at lately, one is called The Peacemaking Pastor. That's a guy who works for Peacemaker Ministries with Ken Sandy, and I think it's a very good publication that helps pastors think through, how do I manage church conflict?
And is that's Alfred Poyer?
Yep. I was afraid to say his name.
Okay, I don't know how to say his last name. I do know that he wrote an article years and years ago called The Cross and Criticism, which has been one of the most beneficial articles I've ever read. And I think it even gets into some of the conversation we're having. We need to be able to welcome men and just brothers and sisters into our life who can confront us and that we can take criticism.
Right.
And just to basically say we're humble enough to do that is a really, really helpful article, because it obviously roots it in the gospel. And so I would highly commend that as well. But just even in this conversation, one of the things that has to happen is you have to surround yourself with brothers who will confront you. But then the people that you're surrounding yourself with have to be courageous enough to not just be yes men. They have to actually be willing to say, no, I think this is wrong, or I disagree with you, or whatever. So, and then what's the second book you have?
The second book was Good and Angry by Dave Pallison. A really unsuspecting good book. You look at the endorsements on the back and people say this is one of the best books on anger in a long time. But I think it's important because we want to recognize there is a good and healthy element to anger, the righteous indignation, and things that certainly God is not pleased with that are going on. But then also on a personal level, what's going on in my heart that can go out of bounds a little bit and pursue a sinful anger? Or do I want to continue to grind an axe that is more my agenda rather than helpful and peacemaking? And it's a balance of looking at what is just, but also being merciful.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, when you said at the beginning, and there is the tendency, particularly in the social media world, just to see this as a, you know, entertainment story, but this is a tragedy. I mean, this is the fact that I've seen some people on social media delighting in the fall of a brother is completely not Christian. And so, I mean, one of the things is we have brothers and sisters there in Chicago who are hurting.
Yeah.
And so we need to weep with those who weep. We need to be praying for the wisdom of the elders that they'll shepherd and care for those folks. And so there's nothing about this that should be we're watching the car crash on the side of the road. This is a serious thing. And so we need to watch ourselves. I mean, the Bible's clear. We could fall in our pride. So anything else you want to add before we kind of jump off?
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think when you read these stories, less celebration and more prayer for, because there are there may be some unbelievers in the mix there, but there are certainly brothers and sisters in Christ there. So continue to pray for them. And whatever forward looks like, I know we have contact with some people still there, and it seems like leadership slowly is being scaled back by resignation or firing. And I don't know if it's a group of pastors who say, hey, we want to be a team who goes in here and takes the helm of this and tries to manage it. It wouldn't be an easy ministry for sure, but I don't know. I don't know how you go forward. You don't want to see a church just close its doors and say, hey, we can't sustain any longer and we have to end this. But I think certainly a season of self-reflection, a season of counseling, a season of evaluating systems and making some changes and whatever leadership going forward looks like. I think we hope that it's Christ-honoring and Christ-exalting and done well.
Yeah. I would anticipate there would be even an exodus of, among the members, and so we need to also be just keeping in mind healthy and solid churches there that'll be taking in broken people, and so should be praying for the churches there in Chicago to be a safe place for them to come and to be shepherded. So, Rob, man, just really, really thankful for your time, and know this is probably weighing heavy, and so I just appreciate you taking time to kind of talk through it. Hopefully it's beneficial to us for our future ministries and those who are listening. So you've been listening to the Baptist 21 podcast. Thanks so much.